Yes, thank you. Just a pre-announcement that anyone who has come for the introduction to meditation class, the series of four lectures, for those who haven't done much meditation before, so that they can learn the basics, that class is being held in the room to my right. This is the main ongoing class. For those who've meditated quite a lot previously. We say that because in this class we have to always take a little bit deeper, and that at the same time we meditate a bit longer. Instead of in the class next door maybe 15 minutes, here we meditate for 45 minutes. If you can't sit still for 45 minutes, then it does create some disturbance for those who have meditated much longer, which is why we divide the group into two classes. It's not a case that one is better than the other, it's just adapting to different people's abilities and letting people slowly develop. So those people who are in the looking for the introduction to class, that is in the room to my right. And you're very lucky that this is a Theravada Buddhism, not a Zen Buddhism class, because if it was a Zen Buddhism class, you'd have the master coming around behind you with a big stick. And if you fall asleep or if you move, you get whacked. So this is much better. So anyway, it's now 3 o'clock, so we can actually start the formal part of the class. And every week, of course, we say a little bit more about the meditation. And there's always a discussion, how much effort to put in, how much should we do, how much should we let go, because if you put too much effort into the meditation, you just get stressed out. It's just like everything else you do in this world. You have a goal, something you try and achieve, and you just get stressed out trying to achieve it. It is a case that you just put effort in and you struggle. Sometimes you make it, sometimes you don't. And anyway, if you do meet your goal, there's always another goal afterwards. So it's always work, work, work. Which means you can never really enjoy the peace of meditation. But if you are too slack, your mind wanders all over the place and you just waste your time. So there is this amazing middle way, which is between effort and just not doing anything. It is called using wisdom power, not willpower. Wisdom power is much more effective. Willpower is like you come across a problem in the meditation and you just push through. It is the banging your head against the brick wall metaphor. And if you keep banging your head against the brick wall, you just end up getting a sore head. Which is stronger, bricks or your head? But wisdom power is, you just go back a bit and see what is the problem. And you find just a few meters to the right of where you've been banging your head, there is a door, which you can go through the wall. If you go a little bit to the left, you find a ladder, which you can climb over the wall. Simple. I still remember someone showed me an ABC news clip of a detention centre they were building somewhere in South Australia, and they had this incredible high-tech gate. You know, it was razor wire, it had sensors and cameras, and you could see it, this really impenetrable gate. You see, as it panned back, you can see just the razor wire fence. And then suddenly the razor wire fence ran out, and you just walk around this immense gate because the government ran out of money building the thing. And that's like wisdom. Instead of trying to rush through the gate, just go a little way around, you go walk around it. And that is like the wisdom power we use. So, for example, the big thing people use willpower on, try and stop their wandering mind. Mind wanders here, wanders there, bring it back again, wanders over there, bring it back again, always bringing it back. And oh, it is endless. So instead of using your willpower, wisdom power, what is the problem? The mind wanders away. Why does it wander away? Why can't it do something as simple as just say, watch the breath go in, the breath go out, the breath go in, breath go out. What's so difficult at that? It's easy. Why can't you continue to do so? So it's not so much, let's say, restlessness. That's just the name. Why is it restless? Why can't you be still? In your whole life, why do you always have to keep doing stuff? Even on the weekend, you keep doing stuff. It's work, work, work. And you complain, I'm tired, I'm stressed out, too much to do. Is there? Or are you keep looking for stuff to do? Why? And a lot of time it's the sense that we are afraid. Fear of stillness. Fear of just being here. We always feel we should be somewhere else. How many people are happy to be here? You might as well be. Remember when I was a young man going to school. We had school lunches. We had a menu, two choices, like it or lump it. That was the choice. Lump it means endure it. So you couldn't choose what you had, you just had to eat it. So, the same as the food you used to have in Thailand. You just don't ask what was in it. That's what I was told. All sorts of bugs and creepy crawlies and whatever they could eat, any source of protein, that's what we ate. So, you just had to not complain and be happy to be here. Because that is one of the great wisdoms we have in meditation. When we want to be somewhere else, that's where we're suffering. That's called restlessness. The mind keeps wandering because it's searching for somewhere to be where it can be happier. And we find that it's endless. We can't be happier by searching around and moving from thing to thing. But what we do one day, we sit here and we tell ourselves, this is good enough. When you want to be here, then you're free. Trouble is that people have so many requirements of what this place should be. Even a little meditation hall here in Nolamara. It's too hot, if you were made in England. It's too cold, if you are Thai people sitting over there. That's where they try and sit next to the aircon. Because the closer you are to the aircon, the more it is like in Bangkok. I try and sit as far away as possible from the aircons. So, instead of trying to rush around trying to make it perfect, we have this beautiful equanimity, which means this is good enough. I'm not going to fight it anymore. I look at my mind, it's good enough. I look at my old body, falling apart, decaying. Well, it is, you're all decaying, some faster than others. But, we say, this is good enough. That's called wisdom power. Because when we say it's good enough, it means we're content to be here. And when we're happy to be here, it doesn't matter, the mind's going all over the place, okay, I'm happy to be here. And then you find your mind stops wandering. Why? Because it doesn't need to search for anything anymore. It's found some place where it can rest and relax. Imagine a bird flying in the sky above Perth, looking for a place it can just settle down to take a rest. And now I see in many of these street lamps, or these big lights on the freeway, they put all of this jagged, spiky stuff so the birds can't land, because they don't want to poop all over the electric work. And because of that, it means that those poor birds have to fly here, fly there, fly somewhere else, trying to find a place they can land and take a rest. And that is a metaphor for your mind. Flying here, flying there, flying someplace. We can just rest and take a break. We're so tired. So that's the restless mind. Flying all over the place, looking for a place to rest. And what you do is say, this is good enough. This is it. I'm going to stay here. It's not perfect, not good, but it's good enough. So, when we are good enough idea, yeah, the mind's running around, that's good enough. I'm falling asleep, that's good enough. When I make peace with things, then I make what I call good meditation karma. Karma is cause, and the effect means, because I'm making peace, I soon experience peace. The mind starts to slow down, starts to stop, because it doesn't need to look for anywhere anymore. It's found a place to rest. Right here, it's good enough. Which means we stop, slow down, become peaceful. Meditation is always the art of stillness, learning how not to move, learning just how to sit down. Last week I was in Melbourne, next week I'll be in Phuket, the week after, a couple of weeks after, in New York. People ask me about my life. I say, oh, my life is always up and down. By which I mean taking off and landing. That's my life, up and down. The ups and downs of Ajahn Brahm's life. But wherever you go, at least wherever I travel, actually I don't travel anywhere. I just sit down in the plane moves, I'm always just sitting here. Just outside changes, but I don't go anywhere. People ask me, are you going to be here next week? So I'm always here. Sometimes you're not here. Changing perspectives is called wisdom power. So the world changes outside. You close your eyes, you're in Perth. You open them, you're in Thailand. You close your eyes and you open them again and you're back in Perth. You close your eyes and now I'm in New York. That's all it is. I don't go anywhere. I don't travel. I'm always here. So that means in meditation. What do you mean, restless mind? You're always here, just watching it. Your mind goes over there, you just watch it. Your mind goes over there, you just watch it. You're always here. What are you more talking about, restlessness? Happy to be here. Then your mind becomes still, even though things outside are moving. There's noises, but I never react. I'm quiet. Someone bangs the door, but I don't bang. But sometimes, you guys, someone bangs the door, and inside your head, why'd they bang the door? Who was that? I'm going to find out and ban them. I'm going to take a photo of them on my iPhone. It's not the first time they did this. Ajahn Brahm needs to know. We've got to put a big sign outside. The people who are banned from coming to afternoon meditation because they keep banging the doors or snoring or moving or something. And the bang of the door finished minutes ago. So, I don't hear noise. Like I don't go anywhere. You're silent. Not reacting. Just happy to be here. That is meditation and how to be still. You try and control the world outside. Stop people from moving. Stop people from coming in late. Stop. But you can't do that. And you always allow people to come in late. Because you're not late. The only time you have is now. And you came in now, right on time. The only time we have. So, with attitudes like that, with wisdom power, it's so easy to meditate. If you want something more, you'll never be able to meditate. If you're trying to get somewhere, you'll always be restless. If you're happy to be here, then you're free. Simple, but very effective. So, now we can actually practice what I preach. So if you'd like to find yourself a nice meditation place somewhere, a nice cushion or some place you can just sit down and relax. So we begin by closing our eyes. And with your eyes closed, usually what you're aware of, as well as my voice, is your body sitting here. Your body sitting here. We're always told to get into a good posture, first of all. What that means is we start to become aware of our body. Not the whole body, but meticulously, systematically, looking through the body to make sure everything is ready. So first of all, your legs. How are your legs right now? How do they feel? Do you need to move them, to adjust them? Remember, many people get sore knees, sore legs. Why? It's because they were never careful enough to place their legs in a good position to begin with. So not only is this for your comfort and pain-free meditation, it's also a beginning of development of mindfulness, becoming aware of the feelings in your legs. You need to move, like I've just been fidgeting. I get the fidgeting out of the way at the beginning, so I don't need to fidget later on. So your legs are good. Then you put your awareness on your bottom to make sure that that's not going to cause you any problems. You put awareness down there. Notice the feelings. Mindfulness gives you feedback. Kindness moves, adjusts until you get the best possible position for your body. And then move up your body. Every part should be examined with mindfulness to see if it needs any adjustment. Stretch your back. You can let it slouch. Lean forward, lean back. It's up to you to find out what is the best position for your own back. your backs. Feels good. A position which you cannot improve. That's kindness. And then you look at your hands. Where are they? Position of your fingers and thumbs can be whatever is comfortable. Nothing is magic. Just superstition. But your feelings, direct experience, that's real. Check that. Once your hands and arms are comfortable, move up to your head. The head is not too far to the left, not too far to the right, not forward, not back, just balance. Comfortable. Checking the body, stage by stage, also interrupts the opportunity to go thinking and fantasizing again. You've got something to be aware of. Before you leave your head, check the muscles around your eyes. See how tight they are or how loose they are. Emotions are played out on the face, so we can recognize if a person's anxious or at peace, whether they are friendly or danger. So loosen the muscles around your eyes. You can do that because if you have awareness, mindfulness of those muscles, it does give you feedback. You learn how to relax. Once that's relaxed, your posture is good. But there's always a part of your body which might be aching or tight or in pain. That's the case, focus on that part of the body, just one part of your body, to the exclusion of everything else. Focusing, zooming in, centering your attention in that area. Going into it. Because once you're mindful of a part of your body which is irritating, you have feedback of that area. Trial and error, you'll soon learn how to relax your own body. The trick is just seeing the connection between your emotional reaction and that physical feeling. If you try and control it, it gets worse. If you let it be, it gets better. Check it out. Make peace with it. Be kind. You find that part of the body responds. The inflammation reduces. The pain gets less. When you let it be, you're not adding the emotional pain onto the physical source. You experience that as what was an ache, a pulsating throb, or sharp pains. Softened. Ease. And continue on that path. And great aches and pains, disturbances in your body can be meditated away with mindfulness and kindness. Once that part of the body has been relaxed, then we can go on to our mind, our emotional world. Only when the body is at ease is it sensible to go on to the more refined emotional world. And just ask yourself, how peaceful are you? From 1 to 10. 1 being really peaceful, 10 being agitated. Just to get aware of the peace-ometer. How peaceful are you? This is using wisdom power to calm down. If we want to be peaceful, we've got to know what it is, where to look. So put your mindfulness on this thing I call peace-ometer, which tells you how peaceful you are. That's why I ask you to give it a number, 1 to 10. Straight away it puts you aware of how peaceful you are. If you get more and more peaceful, learning how to move that needle closer to one. And again, just by relaxing your body, it's how you react to these things in your mind. Give it kindness, letting it be, making peace, happy to be here. This is good enough. That's what moves the needle closer to one. If you want to be somewhere else, you get tense. If you want to change the past, you get tense. Past is unalterable. The only thing you can do is to let it go. Go digging up the bones of the past, and that needle goes way up to 10. You find if you put attention on calmness, peace, stillness first of all, then when the time comes to say, be aware of your breathing, there's hardly any thoughts left. You've attended to the cause of all the thinking. Dealt with the real problem, the lack of peace, because unskillful ways of looking at this moment. Change your mind and you change the world. When the breath comes to you, just go for it. Let your awareness be on the breathing. Breathing in peace, breathe out, let go. Because I'm now going to be quiet until the end of the meditation. getting close to the end of the meditation. How are you? How do you feel? How peaceful are you? How relaxed? And why? Now I'm going to ring the gong 3 times. Please listen. And the third ringing disappears. Come out from your meditation. Because usually the questions from overseas come first, that's nice. Anyone here have a question about the meditation today? Yes, Harry? Over here, Harry. Harry. Here you go, next to you. Here you go.
As a couple of weeks ago, someone asked a question about how to meditate without an alarm clock. And you mentioned that just programming your mind.
Yeah.
I believe I asked that question a couple of years ago. I did quite well, actually, to be honest. It's pretty much almost spot on. The question I'm asking is the sometimes we program ourselves, say, look, we want to get up at 5 o'clock. That's okay.
Yes.
But at times, for example, during the weekends, so we just want to let ourselves go, so we don't want to set the time. And a story about, as you mentioned, that sometimes we get into deep meditation, we probably sort of basically, you know, we don't feel our breathing. So
yes.
Basically, not unconscious, but in the state that we don't realize what's outside.
So what's the question?
So the question is that, you know, it's a joke that saying, you know, that we realize we actually buried 6 foot down in the ground, you know, so things like that, you know. I don't know, in that situation, say, how do we tackle these things, you know? I mean, in case, in an unlikely event that happens, we get into really deep meditation that we don't feel anything.
Let us enjoy it. You might miss an appointment, be late for work, but it's worth it. Have a wonderful time. So it's worth getting into trouble with your boss for being late, having a beautiful, deep, wonderful, rich meditation. Nothing like it in the world. Mm. Well, that's one way. I should actually mention that now you have iPhones and tablets like the one in front of me. You can always just put on an alarm on your tablet. There's all different types of alarms you can put on. You can put on like the Zen Gong alarm. So you can put 50 minutes on the iPad and just go, and after 50 minutes it goes boom. So you can always have your own alarm. Okay.
Just for the family point of view, say the wife come along and say, oh, geez, Thompson's not breathing, you know, call a paramedic.
Yeah, just a paramedic, because most times that will not happen. If it does happen, you'll be perfectly safe. Anyway, first of all, from New Zealand, Germany and Poland, from New Zealand, I managed to detach from thoughts and enter a state of peace while sitting. Wonderful. On my out-breath, I sometimes experience a falling sensation with the absence of thinking, often I get close to falling asleep. Does this mean deep down I'm just tired, or is this common? There's a different thing about just falling asleep, and that's when you really don't realize you're falling asleep. And that is just because the mindfulness is very, very dim, very weak. So if you fall asleep, you don't even know it until afterwards. But with a falling sensation, that's so common, that's usually going into a deeper state of meditation. So if you're aware of a falling sensation, don't be afraid, just go for it. See what happens at the very end of that falling sensation. You usually go into a deeper state of meditation, it's just the way you perceive it. So falling sensations are great, people mess around because they get afraid, they interrupt a natural process. So just keep the process natural, don't get involved. Whenever I go in an aircraft, I never tell the pilot how to fly the plane. If I do, I get chucked out. All you do is just to let the pilot do the flying, and that's for me, the mind knows how to meditate. I just am there as a passenger, enjoying the journey. If it falls, it falls. You enjoy it all the way. So from New Zealand, on the out-breath, experience a falling sensation, go for it. Don't interrupt, you're not falling asleep. From Germany, how do you calm your mind and find peace when in chronic pain? And all you can do is just calm your body and no energy is left. If you can just calm the body and just be still, then you do find some peace. If a person is sick, low energy, or in chronic pain, the type of meditation technique which I advise, which I've mentioned many times, is the Emperor's Three Questions meditation. So from Germany, now is the most important time. Just don't allow your mind to go into the future or the past. If it goes into the future, if you have chronic pain, you start to feel, how long can I endure this? This keeps going on and on and on and on. And it's the fear makes the pain much worse. This is a teaching of the Buddha, which apparently neurologists have found out to be quite true as well. Two parts of pain. One is the physical pain, which you can't do much about, but there's the other part is the mental reaction to the pain, which is the biggest part, 80-90% of it. So if you can just, now's the most important time, the pain right in front of you, the feeling, the sensation is the most important thing in the whole world. Give it importance, value it, don't try and get rid of it, it's important, that is your meditation object. And you make peace with it, you care for it. You can always make peace with anything, even with pain. In fact, if you start making peace with the pain, not pain in the body, but just pain taken away from the body, just pain itself, make peace with it, disembody it, and then it's just pain. You make peace with it. You're kind to it. And it transforms into something completely unexpected. And then you're off into deep meditations. So, in chronic pain, don't try and get rid of it. Go right inside of it. Give it importance. And again, it's not sort of something you have to, is an obstacle in the way of the meditation. It is your meditation object. And now just the mental attitude towards it. Really be kind, make peace with it. Stop fighting it. It's a hard thing to say, but this is good enough. Be happy to be there with the pain, even though it's intense. And it changes the ball game. Lastly, from Poland. When I meditate, I often feel very heavy, as if gravity works more on my body. Is it normal? Yeah, actually, that's quite common. Many people have told me that. They feel very, very heavy. Is it okay to lean one's back and head on a chair or wall? Also, do I have to sit like Ajahn or on a chair with both my feet on the ground? Or can I sit however I feel comfortable, even in a strange position? Yes, from Poland, you can sit whichever way you like. The stranger the position, the weirder, the better. I like weird. So, but feeling very heavy. Sometimes that heaviness is a sign that your body is about to disappear. Sounds counterintuitive. So you have to be light and it disappears. Now sometimes what's happening is the mindfulness gets really strong and everything gets exaggerated, amplified, increased in intensity. So even the body got its natural weight, but the perception makes it feel really, really heavy. And it's a sign that your mindfulness is increasing. Just the more common I remember fear, it's a long time since I felt this now, because just go right past that stage. You just, like ants crawling all over your body, like really itchy, pleasantly so. It's not an irritation, but you can really feel the nerve endings in your skin. And you can, it's always there. I can look at it now, you can feel sensitivity in your skin, but now it's amplified. And so that amplification of awareness, mindfulness is quite common. It's a great sign. Don't be afraid, just stay inside, and soon the next thing which usually happens is the body vanishes. So that's real, the heaviness sometimes. Really, I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't just lean back or lean forward or change my posture. But usually it's the pleasant heaviness and I'm just enjoying it. I'm a very heavy monk. I'm a heavy dude. I have gravitas. But anyway, if you feel, especially the beginning of the meditation, sitting one's back and head on a chair or wall, as many people here do, fine, no problem at all, smart. Or wherever you feel comfortable. So it's okay to sit in a strange position. Sometimes, if you're in a Buddhist temple, they don't lay on the ground, because that sometimes people feel that offensive. If you want to lay on the ground, just do meditation in your own room somewhere. Because sometimes it's ancient from the time of the Buddha. It's not Sri Lankan tradition or Thai tradition, it's Buddhist tradition. You're not supposed to point your feet at the Buddha. So sometimes, but more than that, when people lay on the ground, they usually end up snoring. So it's nice to be able to sit on a floor, sit on a stool, sit on a chair, against the wall. You can put your feet out against the wall, but that's usually comfortable enough. Okay, so thank you for the questions from New Zealand and from Germany, Danke, and from Poland, Prussia. So, any questions from here? Yes? Group meditation karma. Yeah, okay, from group meditation karma.
I just want to go further to ask about karma and rebirth.
Oh no, you've got to keep it short. We've only got a couple of minutes. Okay, so the group meditation, there's something which is important to say about that, is that sometimes when one person has a good meditation in the group, everybody does. There is a sense of resonance that when somebody really does some nice meditation, it seems to, I don't know how it works, but it's anecdotally, experientially true, that everybody gets brought along into some deep meditation as well. So that's one of the reasons why it's good to meditate in a group on a Saturday afternoon, even though you have to come quite a long way, simply because you get into the energy of the monks or the nuns if they're here, and some good meditators who've been here for a long time and meditate on a Saturday afternoon. It supports you, pulls you along. So it's good to do that. But with karma and rebirth, it's just about meditation questions. So yeah,
what I mean is, I just go for, because you are a jhana teacher.
Yeah.
Now, you've been a jhana teacher for so many years here, suppose some of us just get into jhana.
Yeah.
And that is from meditation karma. We're making meditation karma. And that, of course, is part of the memory. Yeah. When this particular person died.
Yeah.
Don't you think, when people always talk about karma, fruition of karma, don't you think this karma that is being made in the memory, at the time of death, the body is gone, the world of five senses is gone, don't you think this karma will automatically come out and this mind will have gone into jhana?
It's quite likely it will come up. If you've had a deep meditation, especially a jhana, it's a powerful experience in your life. And usually, I just mentioned this to somebody, it's weird, but I did, when I was young, 19, walking in Scotland, I fell over a cliff. And you know, it was, number one, that time started to slow down, because it was not a big cliff, I survived easily. But to me, it felt like it was lasting forever, falling down this cliff. Now, what was only could have taken 4 or 5 seconds was like a couple of minutes in my perception. And number two, just even though I was only 19, still many of the main events of my life I could recall. So when people say your life flashes in front of you, I've experienced that. It's pretty accurate. And it gives an idea of what will happen when a person is on that death moment, that they will start to recall some of the major events of their life. And if you've had a jhana, that will be one of them. And that will really stand out. And if it does, you get into that, and then, oh, you're flying. It's a nice one to recall, because it really can grab the mind.
It's just a little bit that I want to understand. You see, because you are a jhana teacher, and it's talking about breeze that we are talking about, the memory, remember breeze. You know, the
memory,
the craving for breeze is there. Of course, jhana is letting go kind of breeze.
Yeah.
My understanding of karma and rebirth and when people talk about always threatening to try and tell you that don't beat back karma, this is bad karma. I always think, why can't you shift it to go into jhana and then when you die, your mind crave for pleasure, it will automatically go into your old recording, your jhana experience. So the mind process will get into jhana.
Yes, so happens.
I can't understand why teachers are not talking about if people around here got deep meditation. I think when you die, your body hasn't taken out a new body, you could have, the mind process could have gone into the karma, into this jhana experience.
Yeah, it's a very important thing to have, and it's very helpful. Purifies the mind.
That's what I mean.
Yes, that's a good thing to do. I agree with you. Okay, so now is the time to pay respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and if you need to have a chat afterwards, please come closer. And we can see you. Actually, next week we'll be at Atom Bamada, will be here. I'll be teaching a retreat in Thailand. And thanks for all the questions overseas.